Are you ready? It's Friday. And here we are, Todd Feinberg with you. Normally, first hour on Fridays, Michael Harrison is here. But he's got a conflict with his company, Christmas Party at Talkers Magazine, so he's doing that now. He's going to join us last hour. And because we didn't do Mikey Monday on Monday, because Mikey didn't put Mikey Monday on the schedule, we're going to do Mikey Monday on Friday. So we need a new name for the segment for this week. Mikey.
Mikey Friday.
Mikey Friday doesn't have the same ring to it. That's why you have to be on Mondays, because of the M thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
So today is, what's your middle name? Does that start with an F?
Frank Friday.
Frankie no. Friday.
It's Nathan. Doesn't
too
work.
Too bad. Nathan doesn't do the trick. There isn't even a day for you.
I know.
Too bad.
So sad.
So Mike's my producer,
in
case you haven't heard before, and he's my favorite person to talk politics with. We just have wonderful conversations.
What about Leibowitz?
Leibowitz is my second favorite person to talk politics with.
Okay.
But it's different with him. It's more of a philosophical conversation, whereas you were sorting through issues, and you both have your role. But what I like doing with you is that you, because you're young, you're bringing fresh eyes to these things. And you ask me questions that somebody else might not ask. And one, because you've got a really intelligent mind, and the other is because it's new to you, so you tend to ask simpler, more basic questions that are actually more difficult to answer because they go to the heart of things.
I have that sheen of naivete.
Yes, but that allows you to walk into rooms where if you were a little smarter, you'd know not to go. And that's...
I don't go into any rooms.
Yes, that's true. You stay in your own room. So I love doing that, and so my hope for Mikey Mondays, even when they're on Fridays, is that we just do those explanations, and we don't worry about anything. We don't worry about listeners. You know, they can call if they want to call. We can answer if we want to answer. We just do an hour where it's really about our conversation and our trying to sort through issues, because to me, the project of this radio show has become, how do we save the state originally, was, I think, the first revelation. We need to come up with a plan to save the state. But then we moved on to, wait a sec. Who's destroying the state? And then how are they destroying the state? And why are they destroying the state? How does this all work? And we're moving down a progression. And the point we're at now is we need to establish safeguards. What is the firewall to stop the plunderers from destroying the state? And that is, we need to train everybody to think in terms of principles, because we've had professional politicians who spent a generation or two trying to take us away from the principles that were put in place by brilliant people who founded this country to make sure we'd never be in this situation. And we let the conniving thieves take away our understanding of our own government. I remember a few years ago when Barack Obama was trying to push something through. It was probably the Affordable Care Act, but maybe it was some immigration thing. And I heard him say, these are basic American values, about something that was the opposite of basic American values. Basic American values are government stays out of our life.
Well, it's a different America now.
Yes, but that's part of the conspiracy. He was saying that knowing he's a constitutional professor before he became a state senator.
I thought he was a community organizer.
He was that before, as a way to build up
the
organization.
Professor?
Yes, not like a full-time one, I don't think, but he was a part-time professor. And he taught constitutional law. Anyone who teaches constitutional law knows that the American system is based on the idea of government's job is to protect the rights of individuals from being trampled by their government. Because that's what government is inclined to do. Our founders looked at the history of mankind and said, what government does is trounce on the rights of individuals.
I think the left still believes it's doing that, though. It just,
well, it depends on which part of the left you're talking about. The politicians? You think the politicians think they're?
I don't know what the politics. I mean, the politicians probably don't. But like the ethos of liberalism of the left is to help the smallest. You know, like the individuals that don't get representation,
sure.
Which, you know, over the last 50, 60 years, obviously they've been focused on minorities and that stuff, which, I mean, it's fine, but then you forget about... it's not good when you separate people with race, because there's plenty of poor white people that could use some help, too.
And in many cities, most cities, perhaps, there's more poor white people than there are poor minorities.
Yeah. So to me, that's the worst part, is using race and... I guess it's just identity politics, but... I still think like they're able to cover that up with compassion, and they're just looking out for the individual, right. These specific individuals.
No, I think you're right that the average Democrat thinks that they're doing something wonderful because they're helping people. But the helping people bait is there to get you to bite on the wrong hook, to bite right. on the hook of big government, of oppression. Big government equals oppression, equals the end of liberty, equals the end of America, because America's premise is to have a liberty-based society. So that's why they've developed these techniques to get people off track and to forget all about the thing that made America great, and that is having a liberty-based society, which means, by definition, the government has to stay out of our lives. Go away. You need our money. It's supposed to be the bare minimum of what you need to provide the bare minimum of services. That's what government is supposed to do. And it's specifically spelled out in the Constitution what the federal government can't do, and it just ignores it.
So when did that all change?
There are different places where you can put its intellectual roots. You can go back to Woodrow Wilson, who was a liberal professor type, but really FDR was the big tragedy for the country, I would say. And I would make him the worst president of the United States in history.
How did he get reelected like six times then, if he was so bad?
Well, he was a great communicator, and he understood the system of buying votes and turning the federal government into this great vote buying machine by teaching people that it could be the savior. And then, of course, he brought us through World War II, which, for that, people gave him
now
a great deal of credit.
Did America not need a savior at the beginning of his... I don't know exactly when he became president, but I know it was around...
32,
after
maybe?
Around the Depression, right after the Depression. So, or during the Depression. So what... I mean, I don't know that his policies didn't... save us from the Depression, or at least factor into it.
I think
it.
What history teaches us is that World War II got us out of the Depression.
Well, yeah, but...
Because what World War II did was require that the whole machinery of the United States economy convert over to fighting the war, which was a debt-driven enterprise. We didn't have the money to fight the war because we shut down our economy, but we borrowed the money, and we financed the war that way, and that allowed us to put everybody to work.
Well, where did all the money come from? Did we just like take a bunch of money from Germany or something?
Well, Germany wasn't exactly going to be the ones who would loan us money, and that's a good question. I don't know where in the world the money existed to be able to...
We just became a superpower after World War II, but I still don't understand where all that money, all that economic...
to be able to
Boom
get us through
came
the war.
From.
Yeah, the war was a very expensive, dangerous thing. The economic boom after the war came from the fact that we had all of these young men coming home, and we had all of this machinery of war ready to be converted back into the economy, and the government borrowed a ton of money to get the money going again. So all of these, and you can argue the rightness or wrongness of any of these policies. But the important thing to understand is that there have been various tricks around through the years, whether deliberate ones or inadvertent ones, that have gotten us outside of our system of government. Slavery and the removal of slavery after the Civil War came with a lot of bad results in terms of trying to keep us being a liberty-based society, ironically. To extend liberty to everybody, which was the mission of the Civil War, if the mission of the Civil War was to end slavery, to extend liberty to everybody resulted in constitutional amendments being passed, which subverted the power of the states over the federal government, which was a big part of how you get rid of what the founders intended. And then the civil rights movement did the same thing because it demeaned states' rights and decided that certain states had to be beaten out of their prejudice against minorities.
So effectively, we've never actually had a country where every man, woman, and child had complete liberty.
Well, of course not. And you never would expect to, because that's such a big thing to aspire to. You know, at the root of what America is, I think, is the idea that it's aspirational, that to have everybody be treated equally, that's the aspiration. All men are created equal. That should be the default position. You don't take money from one person to give to the other person. That's not equality. Equality is you treat everybody as an individual with equal rights to be protected from the plundering of the government and the trampling of their rights from the government. And that's the premise of America, right? That Bill of Rights at the beginning of the Constitution that says they can't break into our homes to spy on us or to steal our documents. They can't steal our property. We have a right to ownership. They can't take our ideas away. We have a right to speech. Those things are all, that's what liberty is. Being protected from the crushing weight of government. And what everybody's feeling in the state of Connecticut, that's such a burden and has created such an air of frustration because they don't understand where it's coming from, is that we have an oppressive government that doesn't care about any of those rights. All it wants to do is to take all our money so it can keep winning elections. It's so disgusting, and it's worse in Washington. 860-522-9842. Let's get a little break in. It's Mikey Monday happening on Friday on WTIC. Yeah, so this is where we are in our conversation over the long term, you know, over the months and, I don't know, the last year or so. From whatever moment it started, the genesis, I think one of the great catalysts for the program, Mike, was, by the way, we're not going to take phone calls yet because we're just not ready yet, we decided. So I'll let you know when we're ready to take calls so people who are calling can hang up for now. And I think the moment where our mission started to become clear and maybe pick up speed, Mike, was when we realized that Len Fasano, the Republican leader, who we instinctively view as the opposition leader, isn't an opposition leader at all. And when that dawned on us, that he was conspiring with the Democrats to help them pass
the early voting.
Yeah. But it was the whole world opened up. Okay, yeah. Now we can see how this game works. He loves being in the government and being part of what the government does. He doesn't care about political philosophies. He doesn't care about political parties. He's there to help the Democrats as their mini-me push things through that are bad for the people, that are good for the big government machinery, that are good for how do we get to hire more people, how do we get to run more programs for the unions. Len Fasano, the Republican leader in the Senate, is on board. And that revelation kind of opened up the world. Now we understand what our mission is. It's not so much left-right politics. It's about right-wrong politics, I think.
I feel like everything is so shady as far as, like, I don't know that Len is necessarily for everything that Democrats are for, but I think he's just too comfortable just going along with it as long as he gets a little piece of the pie or whatever, you know.
Yeah, to me the important thing is the structural idea. It's hard for people. We make a lot of assumptions in life. If the Democrats are in power, you assume the Republicans are against them and are the opposition. But everyone's noticed, I think, that through the years, you don't actually hear an articulation of an American response. What's the American system of government response to endless oppressive spending? Even recently, with the paid family medical leave, if you have the concept of American government that we've been talking about today down, that is, the less they take from us, the more we can afford anything we need. Right. And then they...
Liberty.
Yeah.
That's funny, though, because I recently read an article. I forget where it was, but it was talking about how Trump, like, signed something in the budget that included a paid family medical leave and, like, some other thing. And
yes, that's right.
It's just like, why... maybe we, this is a good transition if you want to talk about Trump.
No, go for it. You're right.
So, like, what is that about? Like, what, I thought Trump is supposed to be the savior or something. Like,
no, Trump is a wonderful example, and this is a good question. Is he a savior? I would say no, he's not, because he's a path to salvation. Because right now he's the first turn of the ship. Say he's an icebreaker, and you know we need to get that ice broken up so we can start to move freely through the waters. There's an analogy. Trump is the thing that's so hot he's going to melt that ice, and then the ships of liberty can sail through eventually. And he's the first vessel you need in this caravan of vessels to be able to make it possible to restore America.
Well, so I don't know that he's the one we need as much as he just happened to be the one that showed up and forced himself into the situation. Like, you know, I don't know that he's leading us in the right direction.
Well, he is in that he's leading us away from the plunderers.
Correct.
And he's challenging the plunderers. But you're right in that he doesn't have principles in terms of government philosophy. He doesn't think in terms of liberty. Everything is transactional to him. He's a more powerful transactional actor who's more brutal than other Republicans who want to be Len Fasanos, who are willing to be Len Fasanos, as long as their back is being massaged on the table next to the Democratic leaders, he's perfectly content to be spending other people's money to get the massage.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to get away from. We have to get back to it's our money. They have no right to a penny that isn't being put to essential purposes.
I guess with Trump, it's like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because we need a guy who's willing to, you know, be the icebreaker, but I just fear that, like, he's so outlandish and just abrasive that he might do more harm than good. Who's the next person that gets elected? Like, I assume Trump is going to win in 2020. Like, I don't see how that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I would think that's right.
But 2024, like, who's the next Republican candidate? And are they going to be a continuation of Trump as far as going in the other direction, towards the American system of government, mm-hmm. away from socialism?
How do you keep the chain going?
What's going to happen on the Democratic side? Like, clearly, Trump has only increased the fervor for socialism, or it seems. I don't see any moderate Democrats being favorable.
Let's talk about the state level for a minute, because I think it's easier to imagine on the state level, because it's such a small, hokey state in terms of how it's run from Hartford. Like, it's the hokiest little government you can imagine, and that's part of the reason why they're so good at stealing and wasting, because there's no newspapers in the state, because it's not a big city. And I don't mean to demean the efforts of the people running the newspapers in the state, because there's some good journalism going on. They're just small entities. They don't have much money to work with, so they can't hire many reporters, and they can't, and plus newspapers tend to be part of the urban big government atmosphere, so they're not necessarily doing it. But the small government here allows you to look at it and see what's actually going on. So the mission here is, I really believe, and this is in my naivete, I guess, it's not that I have a big head, I've just learned how powerful WTIC is. I actually think we can change the course of how the state goes politically. And let's talk about that when we continue on WTIC, because it's time for a news update on News Talk 1080. Hello, hello. Todd Feinberg here, WTIC. First hour, Michael Harrison is usually here on Fridays, but Michael had to move to last hour today. So my producer, Mike, is here. Everyone except me involved with the show is named Mike, so it gets a little confusing. But Mike, producer Mike, is here doing Mikey Monday, because we forgot to do it on Monday. And
forgot. I didn't.
No. Oh, yeah, that's right. You covered up that it was your day, and I forgot, because you didn't put it on the schedule.
I was just feeling a little bashful.
Yes, which you're inclined to do. But today we got you through the bashfulness and into the egomaniacal side of yourself, so you could come on the radio. So we're talking about And I just took a few phone calls while we were, you know, just off the air. I picked up some phones because we're not ready to take phone calls yet on the air. But you should
do that more often.
It's really kind of cool. I like talking to people personally, and then I can put the ideas in when they make the most sense. But Joe was talking about an old TV show, War Show, he's watching. And they always had a point man in the air battles or whatever kind of battles they're doing, where the point man is the guy who goes and makes himself vulnerable. Like, he fires the initial shots so that they can find out where the enemy is.
And sounds like a pretty tough job.
Yes. Well, you would assume.
You gotta pull straws for that one?
Yeah. I assume it's a volunteer thing. You know, those
are the real heroes.
Yeah, you know, the maniacs who want to put their lives at risk. But he was saying Trump's the point man.
Okay.
Trump's the guy taking the fire. And now we're seeing how the evil big government works.
That's a good analogy.
And this is what, because the Democrats have this partnership with the media where they can get any phony message made into the standard American belief system, that they get to confuse people over this. But imagine if there were just a few media outlets that were actually offering an alternative viewpoint on things. Like, just a hypothetical. Like, this is what if NPR interviewed me and I told them why Trump is necessary at this time, and they didn't believe me, but they reported it, and people got to hear it and consider it. Like, what a different world it would be if we heard those ideas. People don't get. I told you the other day at Remote in Glastonbury, this woman came in, Kim, who's a caller. She calls once in a while, and she's a Democrat, and she wanted to know if I really believed all the anti-Democratic things, Democratic Party things that I say. And I, of course, I believe them, but throw specifics at me. I said to her at one point that, because she was saying how it just sounds so, like, I'm so angry and so filled with venom towards Democrats. And I said, well, I can see how you feel that way, because they've robbed us of our system of government. And that seems to me to be something to get upset about, that they've distorted reality in two ways, by pushing through programs. Like, everything they've done, we were talking about FDR before. Everything they've done requires some special ruling from the Supreme Court because it's unconstitutional, and there's all this arm twisting that goes on. And then, just like with Obamacare, John Roberts, who was supposedly a conservative, who's the Chief Justice, he's worried about the institutional credibility of the court. So he violates the Constitution because he doesn't want the nine guys in the Supreme Court to be seen as the ones who are making the laws. So he goes against the belief of all the pro-Constitution guys on the court and says, okay, Obamacare is legal in some contorted ruling. And that's what happened back in the Roosevelt era as well.
Well, who put Roberts into the court? He must have done other positive things.
Oh,
right?
No, Roberts is good. This was a moment. What's interesting about him is that he's a conservative who made a big government anti-constitutional argument.
Why did he do this?
Because he's an institutionalist, especially as the Chief Justice. He's got to shepherd that institution. He doesn't want it to become viewed as political, which it's becoming. He doesn't want it to be seen as...
Well, didn't what he do make it... It wasn't what he did a political act?
Ironically, yes. He was contradicting his intention in the tactic he used to create the outcome he wanted. It's a very good point you just made. Yes, he was trying to prove that the Supreme Court is non-political by making a very political decision by approving Obamacare.
Yeah.
But he did it to preserve the court, because he felt the court would be better over the long run, that it doesn't step into center stage. It's not supposed to be the center stage vehicle. It's not supposed to be how legislation gets written.
I mean, isn't the Supreme Court like the last line of defense?
Yes, it's supposed to be in our current construct. They're supposed to knock things down for being unconstitutional. But they don't always do that, because there are other imperatives, and one of them is that it be democratic, that, that we be seen as democratic, that people view the country as working as a democratic organism. That is, that if the people want something and the people's representatives have passed something, like Congress approves Obamacare, they feel some burden to step out of the way and let Congress do what it wants to do, because that's the democratic mechanism in the government. The Supreme Court is not a democratic mechanism. It's an institutional mechanism. It's fascinating, all of it. But somehow we've got to find a way to get back to the thing. And Trump, I see Trump as being this icebreaker who's able to knock the icebergs into little shards that you can put in your drink. You know, that's what he's good for. And after that, somebody can go through and rebuild America.
Yeah, well, see, that's my issue, is that, well, what's to stop? Once Trump the icebreaker is gone, what's to stop all the ice from just refreezing into the same old system that we've been in for the last 60 years?
We don't know the answer. Some things you do on faith, not religion kind of faith, but the kind of faith where you say...
Yeah, I'm not saying not to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just, that's what I worry about. I don't know if there's anybody else that's like Trump who's willing to do what Trump is doing.
Well, hopefully we only need one Trump. So if you watch what's happening over in England with Brexit, you've got this long multi-year process now. There was a vote a few years ago to get out of the EU. And all the big government people and the institutionalists and the globalists, they don't want that to happen in England because they see it as a loss of money. But the movement is based on the idea that there's been a loss of sovereignty, that the British government has given up basically on having a democratic system because they're turning power over the society to this unelected European thing. And there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with the idea of having an external government. It's like if we said to the Mexican government, all right, you guys get to make... You and Venezuela and Ethiopia, you guys can make decisions about what happens in America. Well, that's crazy. That's not democratic systems. But this, to have a globalist society, that's what you have to do. Everybody's got to say, okay, we're not going to have a representative government anymore.
Yeah, well, so how do you... We are in a globalist society, whether we like it or not. I mean, just trade...
Well, trade
aspect alone, like,
but we get to decide what compromises we make in order to achieve those goals. To what degree are we willing to let go of who we are in order to do what we do with China? And it's interesting you bring that up, because Trump's thing with China is, okay, China's been robbing us blind, stealing from our companies, just rigging the system so that they take as much that they don't deserve from us as possible. And nobody's been willing to stand up to
them. You could make an argument, though, that maybe like they're taking so much of our debt, so it's like it's the least we could do is give them
well,
a little extra.
You could argue that maybe we don't want, maybe we'd be better off with them pissed off at us and not willing to take our debt. And then we'd have to be more responsible.
I'd be better. I mean, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. But anyway, Trump's standing up to the Chinese and saying, you've got to stop stealing from us. And that's putting American sovereignty ahead of internationalism. And that's what's cool about it. And over in England, they're all upset over Brexit, because Brexit is saying England's going to be a sovereign nation. So what if they lose? I think the estimate is they'll lose 2 or 3 points off of GDP. Well, so what? It's one of the richest nations on earth. Let them make that adjustment in order to have a sovereign nation. I would make that deal. I have no problem with that. Anyway, huge victory yesterday for a guy who is a sort of a Trump character. And the reason I bring this up is because I don't know how we get from here to there. Nobody knows how we get from here to there. Just like the founders when they, you know, the revolutionaries, the pre-founders, when they started having the audacity to consider having a revolution. It's like if a colony of the United States decided to rebel, and I don't know what the analogy would be, though. But imagine if there were a bunch of states that were under our thumb, but 1,000 miles away, and we ran everything that went on there, and they decided to
like Hawaii.
Well, Hawaii is part of us by voluntarily, but yeah, if Hawaii decided, screw you, America, and we really depended on them being one of our well, part of our country because of the amount of money we made from them. Right. Like, say they were California.
Got to get those pineapples.
Say California really wanted to secede, and the federal government felt they couldn't afford because of all the produce that gets grown there, and you know, all
avocados.
And all the tech that comes out of there, and they couldn't afford it. This is the revolution would be like California breaking away by force, going to war with the United States, the biggest military machine in the history of mankind, and they're going to go to war to be able to get free. That's what the revolutionaries did. It was a stunning thing. And they didn't know what was going to happen. They had no reason to believe they could win, but they went with it. And that's what I feel like we have to do. We have to find a way to break away from the dependency on the largesse of the plunderers stealing our money and then saying, we'll give it back to you if you're nice, if you behave properly, which is really the system of government we have now.
Yeah, well, I didn't think the only way to get to that place is to have a change in values. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing about the left is there's just a different set of values that those ilk have.
Yeah, but they don't realize how devoid of values they are. They don't understand that the premise is take all values out of society and make everything transactional. Let's make everything transactional. We will sell you on the violation of the principles of this nation on every policy by pulling on your heartstrings in the most manipulative way while we make sure that education is not performing up to snuff so the average voter is too uninformed and uneducated to know how to stand up to us and to know that they should stand up to us. That's the insidious nature of what they're doing. And I just want us to launch the alternative, and I believe that other people will come along with us. When people start hearing the right arguments being made, and when they start understanding how insidious the game is that they play in Hartford, how gross it is. They have bankrupted this state. $124 billion in debt. So that's 6 years of annual spending. But that would be 100% of the budget over 6 years. So if you could pay off 5% each year, which they could never do because they say they can't even cut 1% out of the budget. That would be devastating. But say you could do 5%, then you're talking about 120 years to pay off that debt.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable what they've done to destroy this state, those miserable, rotten people who pretend they care about us. 860-522-9842. Let's take some phone calls now, Mike, all right?
Sure.
If they want to call, maybe they've gone to sleep. On WTIC. WTIC.
Yeah, talking to the mic.
Yeah, I guess I should. 860-522-9842. We're ready to take some calls if you want. And I just talked to Bob from Woodbury who called in. He said, Charlie Daniels, we have to check out the Pledge of Allegiance. Charlie Daniels did his own modification of it in order to explain the same kind of thing we're talking about. And Bob said that what's good about it is that it says that the way we get our liberties is because of because the states run the federal government, which is right. Federal government was secondary to the sovereign states. It was there as an agent. You know, it's kind of like an association when a certain industry creates an association to represent it. The industry is in charge of that association. All those guys like who run a company that's inside of an association, like say it's a banking association, each of those banks is paying dues. They don't like what the association's doing. They just pull out, stop paying the dues. And eventually, if that's a majority opinion, the thing will start to starve and it'll have to go back to doing what it's supposed to do. And unfortunately, we've allowed the federal government to get into a position where it's got so much influence now that there are even Democrats who say in public that we should start changing the governors into just being federal government representatives, get rid of the state governments. That's how far we've gone away from the premise of America, which was designed to protect liberty. It's really cool, all this stuff. I love this stuff.
Yeah.
We got to save the country. We've got to save the country. Should I just put this call on, Colt? Let's do this.
Sure.
Hi, you're on WTIC. Who's this?
This is Matt. How you doing, Todd?
Hi, Matt. You're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, you were talking about the Constitution earlier.
I've been doing that my whole life, yes.
And you mentioned the previous president was a constitutional law professor. And I think what people in this day and age do not understand about the original Constitution mm-hmm. is that basically it was a permission slip from the people to the government. And the permission slip said specifically, these are the things the government can do.
Yep.
If it wasn't covered under the permission slip, then the government couldn't do it.
Yep.
We've, beginning with Roosevelt, I think, or beginning maybe even before that, we've taken that principle and slowly turned it on its head. And now we act as if we, the people, need a permission slip from the government to do things.
And the government acts like that.
Yeah, we've got it exactly backwards.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love the permission slip idea. It's kind of like in high school when you needed, did you need a pass to be in the hall in your high school?
Yeah.
So now, yeah, sure. Now the kids are controlling the halls. It's just like that. It's like nobody's going to ask them for a permission slip. They're in charge. That's how I see it. That's a great analogy. Thank you for that.
Okay, take care. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Matt. You too. 860-522-9842. What do you think of that one, Michael?
That was good.
Permission
like
slip.
Yeah, good analogy.
Did you have that in high school?
Yeah. Hall pass. Yeah, to go to the bathroom.
My image of high school now, I'm sure there's some places that still have hall passes, but I think the teachers probably need hall passes now, and the kids give them out.
I don't know. That's a little extreme, I think. But, I mean, I've been out of high school for like 10 years, so I don't know. Maybe things have changed.
What's it like to be so old that... high school is a 10-year memory?
It's weird.
So Kathy called in and wanted to know a little of your background. You've got about 90 seconds, fill her in.
I grew up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
South Windsor for like a while. And then me and my mom moved to Manchester. Mm-hmm. I went to St. James School in Manchester.
St. James?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was he the saint of?
I have no idea.
Come on, you went to his school.
Yeah, so?
They didn't teach you what he did, what his thing was?
I mean, they might have, but like, why would I retain
that?
Come on,
there's certain things. Like, I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, the birthplace of American liberty. Don't fire unless fired upon, but if they mean to have a war, let it begin here, Mike.
Okay.
You don't forget these things.
Well, I guess they were a little less enthusiastic about James and his sainthood.
I think so.
I did that. I went to Manchester High School. Went to Manchester Community College for 3 years.
The coolest thing producer Mike ever said to me was when he told me he didn't go to college. And I just thought that was such a beautiful line. And then he said, well, I went to Manchester Community College, but I didn't go to college.
Well,
explain that.
It's a little different, right? I mean, it's not exactly the same thing. When you think of college, you think of dorms and
lecture
halls.
No, that's not what you meant, though, I don't think. I think what you meant was you didn't get an education after high school.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, I know. It's not fitting your narrative.
No,
but,
I just thought that's really what you were saying. It was, but
not
you,
really.
You probably don't want to trash them on the air, so I won't.
Well, I don't regret going to Manchester Community College. I mean,
okay, good. Yeah. And how close did you get to graduation? You went 3.5 years?
I got an associate's degree.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.